Welcome back. We are with Ian Tattersall at the American Museum of Natural History, where he is a curator in the Department of Anthropology and oversees many interesting things. There are very few people in the world who have seen and touched and thought about as many skulls as you have, in lots of pieces, in lots of times. Most of us are real proud of ourselves if we can think back to before agriculture, if we can think about being human before 10,000 years ago. You have, for me, changed the way I think about what kind of a creature we are, that we are one of many. When you're handling all of these forebears, and they are the real thing, these aren't casts, do you have a sense of the enormity of what you're doing?
In a sense. Of course, there is a technical preoccupation when you're looking at fossils. You're looking for particular kinds of information that they can that they can give you to help with the questions that you're answering. But 16 years ago, 17 years ago now, we realized that these fossils are just not just repositories of information, but they're icons, and they're icons of the human past. And we organized the most marvelous exhibition that we called Ancestors, in which a large number of human fossils from a couple of dozen institutions around the world were assembled here in New York and displayed essentially as jewels. We want people to understand that there is a magic to these objects. And there is an aesthetic to these objects. Some of them are very beautiful. And this is one of the most successful exhibitions, I think, that we that we ever had. It was quite an extraordinary occasion.
So there is curiosity among all of us about those who came before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think everybody is curious about where they came from. The question is... is in this case, it's just shifted into the very distant past. You're not interested in your immediate parents or your grandparents, but you're interested in where as a species, as a member of a particular species you came from.
Do you think we'll ever know?
We are knowing more all the time. It's a story that will probably never be fully understood, but the fossil record is getting larger all the time. The kind of questions that we can ask of these fossils is getting to be wider. There's a wider range of questions that we can usefully answer. So yes, I think there is progress being made.
It would seem that some of the emphasis on tools is because they exist physically. You can find them; they're in the record. Mm-hmm. You make an interesting point about tool making. It provides a tangible product, something that gives you positive feedback. It is an objective process, so the tools would have some natural appeal. And you sort of juxtapose that against the artistic temperament. Mm-hmm. And we were talking earlier about the behavioral as opposed to the anatomical. And in some ways, the physical part, the tool part, would seem to go along with the anatomical in terms of being an objective process. But it sounds as if a lot of what you characterize, you know, the distinguishing characteristic between modern humans and their ancestors, their predecessors, is in that other side, in the intangible, in the use of this of these new insights, of this new perspective, in a non-feedback, in a almost non-tangible. Though you obviously are stuck with what can be physically reproduced, but that is to me a fascinating distinction. And to me, it says a lot about humans as artists as opposed to humans as toolmakers.
Exactly. I think the real fascination is how we acquired the consciousness, the aesthetic, whatnot, that we have today. And with the first toolmakers, we're very far from that. Now, in the history of toolmaking, again, there are a number of different steps. The first one was flaking off a little flake, little sharp flake, irrespective of what that flake actually looked like from a piece of stone. Then came a stage wherein people would take a lump of stone and, or early people, hominids, would take a lump of stone and bash it until it assumed a particular shape. The famous teardrop-shaped hand axe is a very good example of that. Then the next stage was to shape a core of rock in such a way that a single blow would detach what was effectively a finished tool. Just needed minor modification to become a useful tool. And then we basically have refinements on this. The Neanderthals made these so-called prepared core tools. Modern humans who came into Europe and displaced the Neanderthals had a slightly different technology, making long, thin strips of blades, as they're called, from a sort of a cylindrical core. But that is essentially, in a nutshell, the history of human tool making before the agricultural revolution. Only sort of four major steps, but each one embodying some kind of a cognitive leap.
So where does the artistry come from?
Artistry. I think that is built right into the center of modern human consciousness. The Neanderthals made beautiful tools, but I don't think that they really looked upon them as objects of beauty. The Neanderthals had some kind of aesthetic sense. For example, at some Neanderthal sites, you find fossils which must have been carried in, little marine fossils. Interesting objects which caught the Neanderthal eye and were collected. There's already something very human in that. But artistic expression, as far as we are aware, was not something that the Neanderthals indulged in at all. It was something unique and something new with the modern humans who displaced them.
What, just to put it in perspective, we've talked about anatomical and behavioral. When did Homo sapien become Homo sapien anatomically, and when did Homo sapien become Homo sapien modern man, modern person, behaviorally? Do you have the evidence, or can you infer where?
The problem there is that the archaeological record is not complete. We don't know everything that happened. We don't come even close to knowing everything that happened either behaviorally or anatomically in our evolution. But there is no question that modern human anatomy arose at, say, 100 to 150,000 years ago, quite a long time before you get any suggestion at all in the archaeological record anywhere in the world that modern human behaviors, symbolically mediated behaviors, emerged. So we're looking at, say, 100 to 150,000 years ago for the origin of modern human anatomy, and we're looking at, say, around 50,000 years ago for the origin of modern symbolically mediated behaviors.
How does this modern symbolically mediated behavior manifest itself in the record?
In a number of different ways. I mean, there are some very very indirect things. You know, in Africa 60,000 years ago, there are some hints of use of bone tools, for example, of flint mining, of transport of objects over long distances. The evidence isn't very good because it's a huge place, and archaeologists are fairly thin on the landscape. But there are these hints. But where we really find evidence that we're looking for about artistic capabilities and creative expressions and so on, comes in Europe, where there are a lot of archaeologists and conditions right for preservation of early artwork. And now we have art, actual wonderful art, dating back to about 30,000 years ago or more. And this is not crude art. This is not the equivalent of the childhood of art. This is fully blown art. And anybody who has ever been to the cave of Lascaux knows what an impact this art has. In fact, I don't think I've ever had a more powerful experience of any kind than going into Lascaux for the first time. This is not crude art. This is great art that speaks directly to our sensibility today.
And that coming from Ian Tattersall is saying something. I am Paula Gordon. Bill Russell and I will be back for a few more minutes with Dr. Tattersall. Please be with us when we return.